In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars that came here to Earth, caught in their struggle through the whole universe. Robotic warriors.
Who's up to here? Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. And now, without further ado, here is Weird Wolf. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, can you take the chorus stop?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 99, recorded April 11th, 2014. I am your host, Deron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Megamus.
Hello.
Plasticon.
How you guys doing? Been a while.
I am Unicron.
Hello, everyone.
And Barisi.
Hello.
And also joining us this week is our special guest, Generation One writer and associate producer, Flint Dilley. Welcome to TFYLP.
Hey, it's good to be here. It's good to be in the world of Transformers. I'm loving all the boxes I'm seeing here.
Yeah, we're big time nerds. But you know, that's one thing that is a testament to a television show that is 30 plus years old, is you've got guys like us that are still big time fans. I know, you know, the old story that I tell everybody, and it's not really a story, it's true, but you know, I was a very sick little boy. I had a heart disease. I couldn't run and play with the other kids, and one thing that really kept me happy as a kid was watching that television show. And wow. You know, that's, I mean, egg. It's the show and the toys and the comic books really kept me happy whenever I had nothing to be happy about, you know. So
That's great. I mean, I'm really glad. I mean, it never occurred to us. I mean, we thought we were just doing a show that people to watch, and you know, we knew. I mean, we're getting good ratings, so we knew people, you know, kids were liking it. But it never occurred to me I'd be talking about it 30 years later. You know what I mean? Other than to, you know, tell my kid, oh yeah, I was doing the show, you know, back, you know, and here we are, and I'm really touched by that. I'm really glad, because we worked hard on it, but we just, you know. No, that was before now, when everything is available all the time. You know, it was like, you know, there was cable. We thought, you know, they'll run the show through the seasons, and maybe they'll do reruns, and they'll be on VHS. Cause you guys don't even remember VHS. But,
I remember Betamax.
I do.
Beta.
No. All right.
They still
hold
up some of my toys.
Yeah, I had no idea we'd be sitting here 30 years later, but, you know, that stuff's really held up.
Yeah, I mean, it's been said that, you know, the original cartoon many times was just a 24-minute commercial for toys.
Well, but, yeah, it was.
Yeah, and while it was that, it was also much more to a lot of people. I mean, you know, the animation, you know, compared to what it is today may not be top-notch, but, you know, the stories provided entertainment. Be it funny, somewhat serious, and is the basis for a lot of our fandoms today. I mean, I personally, my toy collecting is really influenced by the characters that were in the show, you know, and it's, you know, it's still a good toy commercial 30 years later.
Well, you know, I mean, what's funny too, you know, I say that, you know, people are talking about it, and but the thing is it was a toy commercial, but that had nothing to do with us when we were working on it. You know, I mean, we didn't think, oh, we're doing a toy commercial. It doesn't work that way. We're out there doing the best stuff we could. And what was great about Hasbro was, you know, unlike networks had these really complicated agendas. You can only imagine what their agendas were. You know, they wanted to push every social issue and change every child's life, and you get 500 notes. You know, Hasbro didn't care. As long as we got the toys in there and, and we didn't do anything really horrible. Nobody got tortured or, nothing really, no real mayhem happened.
They more like Kill Optimus Prime.
What?
More like Kill Optimus Prime.
Yeah, well, that's a different story. But the, just for the show itself, like, that was the most creative freedom I ever remember having, from point of view of, they were not in the business of meddling with the show. That changed after we got done, after that first generation of Sunbow. And also, everybody in it was really, like, glad to be there. And Sunbow, it was just a great period. Yeah, and I'm glad something good came out of it. Because, we sure worked hard on it. It wasn't like we thought, oh, it's a toy commercial, we don't care. It's like, these guys are playing for Bloodsport. The writers and producers. Because there are all these other shows, and we were always competing with the other shows. So technically it was a half hour commercial for toys. We can't deny that, but it was not like we thought, oh, we don't care.
Well, it was very evident whenever I watched it as a kid. And one of the things that latched onto me, because whenever Transformers first came out, whenever the More Than Meets the Eye three-parter first aired, I was a huge He-Man and Masters of the Universe fan, and that's what I was collecting. And a lot of the toys and the cartoons around that time seemed, they were different, but they seemed the same.
Yeah.
But yet, whenever Transformers first aired, I actually felt like I was getting in on the ground floor of something totally new and totally different, and I got enveloped in this world of robots from the planet Cybertron, and I don't know if anybody else here has a similar story or anybody else want
to. How do you guys get into it anyway?
I'm trying to figure out age wise, and I'm probably going to be towards the top, unfortunately. To me, it was just toys. It was the show. It was the comics. And it was something that resonated with me. It wasn't, I absolutely didn't think that this was something that I was going to cherish or love or even talk about years later. When I was growing up, you had army men, you played with guns, and then then all of a sudden G.I. Joe, Transformers came out, and the whole being able to combine and using your head and thinking. And the other thing, I've said this before, the other thing I loved was taking this toy to my father and saying, okay, can you make it into the robot? And totally stumping him was just so much fun. So, as a kid, you don't think about investment in something that you're going to talk about when you're old and gray like I am and everything. You don't talk about those things. You don't think about that. So, to me, it was pure and simple. What you did, I loved. I loved watching it. It was entertainment, and I loved it. It had no other meaning other than it was pure entertainment.
It's really interesting that you just said there, because it's something that's crossed my mind, but it's like that was the first time ever in human history, that period in the 80s, when kids could do things their parents couldn't do. In other words, it's like, all of a sudden, it was this magical period. It's like a beat before that, you had pretty much all the same stuff your parents did, and they were better at everything. Then all of a sudden, computers, out came Transformers, out came Rubik's Cube, out came all this stuff where, like, any, 12-year-old, any 8-year-old was better at it than their parents. And that had never happened before, to the best of my knowledge in human history.
Yes and no. Yes, in all the other part of the world. But in my house, no. My dad could do it, no matter what it was. I remember, and it's only because you said Rubik's Cube, I remember my father trying weeks, months, to get this stupid little cube to work.
Yeah.
Because he'd be damned if a kid could do it and he couldn't. So I can understand that.
Yeah, no, then you had a unique house, because like everywhere else, I even noticed that when I was doing the show. You know, I'd be sitting there, you know, thinking of trying to figure out what to do with the story, and I'd be like, you know, trying to get Starscream back together. And, you know, any kid in the world could walk in and do it in 12 seconds. You know, I actually had to think about, okay, the wing folds over here, wait a minute, the head folds. You know, it was and Megatron, G1 Megatron was really hard to put back together because I kept having the side of the gun fall off on me.
You should see the Masterpiece stuff now. Oof.
Yeah.
Or some of that. Well, they make them, and I noticed that too. And there's actually a resurgence of making them more simplistic to like they were in the 80s, as opposed to more and more complex. Because, I mean, some of that is just progression. To make them a little more harder to make you think. But then you get to that point where it's more of a chore.
Yeah.
So there's more of a resurgence to go back to the 80s, all for that. So I love the 80s.
The other thing they changed, too, is like the first couple of years, the Transformers, you could tell what they were. You know, like you got Blaster and you got, you know, Soundwave and like, you know, they don't have boom boxes anymore. They sort of do.
I remember the boom box.
Yeah, remember the boom box?
These are the boom box of today.
That's exactly the boom box of today, you know. But
honestly, I don't have anything big enough to set up here, you know.
I was just seeing last week with Ratchet and Razor Claw and the cassettes. And I realized, you know, half the readers don't even know what cassettes are. But nevertheless, I had the Blaster had to do some stuff. And so the cassettes and what's the name? Soundwave. It was really weird using the cassettes because I'm realizing, okay, that metaphor doesn't exist. But the first season, all the Transformers, the first couple, they all looked like something in the real world. You know, it made a lot more sense. You know, and then the third season, that's part of the reason we moved to space. Was that we had all these triple changers and all these things that, you know, our joke was, oh, this is it turns into a what? You know, I mean, you fold them into, we didn't even know what they were.
Go ahead.
No, I do have a question, but go ahead.
I have to say the season three has to be one of my favorites of the original cartoon because I liked it whenever it went out into space. I mean, to me, the stories seemed more varied and diverse, and we won't talk about Carnage and C Minor tonight. but
did Buzz write that? I'm trying to remember who wrote. I remember Carnage and C Minor, and I'm trying to remember who wrote that. I mean, that sounds like the kind of title I
had. It wasn't necessarily a bad episode. It's just that the animation they it's like whenever they animated it, they didn't get the scale right with some guys, and you had combiners.
Wait a minute. If we're going to go into that and paint apps and, you know, two Starscreams next to each other and everything, no.
There's so many errors through the entire series.
It's very simple. You want to wrap your mind around it? It was a kid's show.
Yes.
Okay, that's all.
I had a question for you.
You'd said that Hasbro had given you a lot of creative freedom back then. On the projects that you're working on now, do you still think that you have that same freedom? Or do you think you're more restricted because they want their brand to go this way? Or they really want to promote this? Or what's your take on that?
Well, as it happens, the thing I'm working on right now, the game for Google, is up there with Transformers for creative freedom. I mean, I mean, all good projects are like that. It's not just because I'm a writer, but it's because usually what happens is when you creative freedom is the outgrowth of a lot of other things, you know, and that is that, nobody's going into it with an agenda. Nobody else thinks they can be doing your job, stuff like that. I'd say now I'm at that same part of creative freedom. But when when I did a lot of video games in the last decade, and it would range. And sometimes you didn't have restricted creative freedom because people were restricting your creative freedom. It's just you were working in an established universe. Like I was doing Diablo, And yeah, I couldn't just go out and invent anything I wanted. You know, I mean, they had to, you know, in a video game, you have to, you're pretty pinned to the models they have and the world they've created and the mythology and all that. Yeah, I was talking about specifically. And then when you're writing a movie for a studio, it's a different issue. And that is, these guys are risking $100 million, you know? And so they are worried about every single decision you make. And sometimes you overthink things and sometimes you get it right. You know, so, I mean, there are different inhibitors to freedom. And, you know, what I was talking about then is specifically in that period of animation before that. See, part of the reason that stuff was so fresh and everybody was so excited was because before that there was only networks, and the networks had a monopoly on all animation. There were like 4 hours on Saturday morning, and every animated show that was ever done were done in those 4 hours. And so they were just like tyrants. And, you know, then, you know, that's when basically when political correctness started. And when Hasbro came along and all the toy shows came along, they just didn't care. You know, they weren't in dire, they didn't come out of that world. And so all the creative people have been working on for the networks, we like came flooding over. And then plus with G.I. Joe and Transformers, a lot of the people working on it came out of comic books. Yeah, I was kind of the game guy, but everybody else had, you know, done comic books and animation. And so they brought all that into it. You know, ideas like, you know, continuity and shared universes and canon and things that really had never been in animation before. So that's part of what happened.
Well, I've always really had a question to ask was with like just the animation and the story arcs and stuff, was a lot of that influenced from Japan or was it just stuff you guys just came up with?
Most of it was stuff. If it was influenced by Japan, it was pretty subconscious. I remember somewhere in the middle of season one, a friend of mine said, "Hey, have you ever seen anime?" And I said, "What's that?" And so he hauls me over to this guy's house and we spend the entire weekend. I mean, like, this is back in the days, you spent an entire weekend doing something. And we were watching every VHS tape, you know, he and his, you know, mutant friends could do, this guy living up in Berkeley. And, you know, had. And I didn't understand any of it. I'm just like watching it and it was just chaotic and crazy and I was loving it. But nevertheless, I think it seeped in. And there was a lot of Japanese influence at that point that wasn't, because remember in the 80s, the Japanese were just like taking over the world. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of Japanese influence that wasn't specifically anime or, you know, Japanese animation. It was just Japan. There was a lot of influence just in the whole culture.
Well, I was always curious of that because I was really into like Shogun Warriors and all that as well, well before.
Yeah.
Because when I was a kid, I got a hold of stuff that was not like retail stores for Hasbro, but like my dad used to go to flea markets. We went to the flea market one time and these vendors there was selling a lot of Japanese toys and some of the stuff, never saw that stuff before. And I was like, what is that? You know? And it's just really, really interesting seeing that stuff and how some of that's just kind of influenced all the cartoons and such that we started getting through the 80s. I mean, my first Transformer I ever had was a Bumblebee. And
right.
Absolutely loved that thing. And that just completely just started the fire for me. And it's
Yeah, Bumblebee was a lot of people's entry Transformer, you know. And it's like a Volkswagen Bug, you know, which was like the classic, you know, the sort of the car. You never see it now, but that was like, it was the most common car in America at that point. And so, you know, they figured, oh, let's make a Transformer out of the most common car in America. Oh, what's funny about it is I don't even think they had to make a deal with Volkswagen. I mean, they, like, you know, just did it. I don't know, but, you know. But, no, in answering your question, yeah, there were just a lot of influence. A lot of the comic guys were really into Japanese stuff, too. There's a lot of ninja stuff and a lot of samurai stuff. And, you know, Japan was just really cool back then. And so that was part of it. But and then the other thing is, you know, nowadays you can get anything anywhere, anytime, you know. Then you had to go down to Japantown, right? You go to Japantown and you find the little, you know, funky toy store, Japanese toy store, and you'd see stuff you'd never seen before. You know, and you'd never see anywhere else, you know. It was just a whole different world. And you know, so it was sort of the whole experience, you know, we Yeah, we drive out of Westwood, and we drive all the way down to Japantown, and we're walking around all these stores, and you know, you felt like you took this little trip to Japan or something. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's kind of how I felt when I went to those flea markets when I was a kid. I mean,
yeah,
they didn't have the internet back then. Nobody knew anything, and then the whole Diaclone little driver thing was like a complete, like, that was a rumor in the States until we actually found out on the internet, boom, there's pictures of the stuff coming out. So,
yeah, it's true. No, the internet's changed everything. You know, and I mean, I think, you know, probably about 80% of it's for the better. But I kind of miss that world where there's stuff that was really scarce and you could only, like, go to this one little store and, like, you know, you had to talk to the guy behind the counter and he'd show it to you, you know, that stuff. They just don't have that now. And now you just Google something and, boom, you know, you see it.
Yeah, that brings up a interesting question regarding, or, well, not question, but statement regarding the show is that, you know, in today's age, you know, there's so much promotion on the internet about different shows. Like, we've already seen promotional materials for the next Transformers television series.
Yeah.
Leading into Animated and Transformers Prime. We saw all kinds of promo materials for that, trailers. I remember as a kid growing up, we didn't know when new episodes were coming out, what was going to be next. Every day, whenever I'd come home from school, I'd get home around 2:30 in the afternoon. I'd run in and I'd watch my DuckTales, I'd watch my G.I. Joe, and then Transformers would come on at 4:30. And usually every day I'm like, is it a new episode? I was so eager to see a new episode. And, you know, today, I mean, if I want to know if there's a new episode, I just Google it.
Yeah, no, the world was just much more mysterious, because if it wasn't in TV Guide, there was no way to find out what was happening, and nobody in TV Guide talked about Transformers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I mean, that just, you know, that just...
It would say Transformers, and then out from it, say Animated.
Well, yeah, we yeah. Reputable.
Saturday morning cartoons, guys.
Well, I mean, that's what I was going to talk about. You had mentioned that a lot of the cartoons were... in a little, you know, 4-hour block on Saturday. Yeah. And when I was growing up, that's what we had, is it was called, we actually called it Saturday Celebrations, what it was. You would get up early, not for school, but so you could watch these shows. And that's the first time I saw Transformers.
Yeah.
It was just one day, one show a week. And you're right. You didn't know. You didn't know what you were going to get. You didn't know. And they were in blocks. And TV Guide was very, very vague on what they were showing, especially for kids show. It might say Transformers and then something as vague as kids animation. That's
right.
It. You know, and that's it. That's all you got. And so, you know, people are kind of – they're pampered because they get them, you know, 5 days a week, you get bombarded with these shows. I mean, we literally waited as kids for Saturday, one day, you know, to watch these shows. That's all we had.
And then it went weekly, or daily rather.
Yeah, but when it first started, I mean, that's what Saturday was. I mean, you got up and you know, you were down and the parents were still asleep and you were down in front of that TV. And, you know, I think it started at like 7 or 8 in the morning. And you watched your shows.
Well, I mean, when I was coming up, I mean, what you'd get, at, like, if you got up at 6 in the morning, you'd get the really weird stuff from Japan. And, like, you know, there's Tobor the Eighth Man. And, you know, the early Marvel shows, which looked like, you know, they literally took the comic book and shot it. And then every once in a while, they shake the page.
Yeah, it was kind of like still animation type.
Yeah.
I remember that. I do.
Yeah, that's what you got. Or you get these, like, you get serials from the 40s, you know, and they'd show you a 6-minute episode, and then, you know, they end
the serials. Yeah, but you know, it's funny you'd mentioned the Marvel and all that, the superheroes. I remember the neatest theme songs from that.
Yeah,
and people are going to have to Google it, but one of my favorite was Captain America.
I don't remember it.
Oh my God! It's about him throwing. You know, when he throws his shield, you got to Google it. It's awesome. They had Iron Man, they had Captain America, they had Thor, and it wasn't one theme song for one of them. It was all of them had different. Yeah, all of them were different. So I do remember that. You just brought back a little bit of childhood right there. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I mean, that's what a lot of this is. It's like, you see what was different all of a sudden in the 80s was, yeah, I mean, nobody used the word transmedia back then, but that's kind of what you had is you had, you know, you'd get the toy, so you had the physical object, and then you have the comic book, and then you'd have the TV show. And so, you know, it began to engulf your life. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, Batman was a little bit like that. With the Batman, the Adam West series, I mean, you could actually go out and buy the car from Batman, and there was a monthly comic book. There wasn't anything like the show, but I didn't care. And, you know, I got like the comic book better. But in the 80s, all of a sudden, with Transformers went all the way to, and we've got a movie, you know? And, I mean, it was like, you know, I think the dollars changed a lot. The broadcast pattern changed a lot. And it really, you know, really sort of ushered in the modern era where, you know, now, you know, everything's available all the time.
Bryce, you or Brandon have any questions?
You want to go first? I got a couple of them. I guess my question is, when y'all were actually writing, did you actually have, like, some toys there while you were writing and you kind of, like, whatever you want to do with it and all, and
different ways. I mean, some writers, I mean, like Paul Dini to this day, when he's working on a show, he gets all the characters that are in that episode. It started when we were working on a Star Wars show right before Transformers. We were working on this thing called Droids. It's a bad show, but nevertheless, he'd have all the stuff. Yeah, and you know, and he'd have all the stuff there. And then even when he was, you know, as recently as when he was doing Batman and Justice League, if you know, every character was in the, he had hundreds, you know, every action figure from the show. And every character was in the episode he'd have there. And I'd do that every once in a while. But then I my desk got too cluttered because Hasbro would send us whatever we wanted. I mean, it was like a fan's dream, you know. Not Transformers, just G.I. Joe, but we had the USS flag was our coffee table. It was a giant 7-foot long. And I feel I'm still kicking myself for not taking it. I remember we were moving out of the office and nobody knew what to do with it. And I was thinking, I could just kind of throw this in some boxes and take it home. I'd retire on that now.
I was going to say, you're one of the four people that actually bought that thing because it was so big. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was big enough to be, I mean, literally, it was a coffee table. I remember you had coffee mugs and ashtrays, which people smoked back then, yeah, and ashtrays and stuff like that all over it. And, you know, we thought it was real cool.
Awesome.
we had the figures. Because a lot of the big thing that I wrote from, though, somebody ought to reprint this. Maybe somebody has. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but I had like this 7-foot-long chart that was all the characters to scale. Now, after a while, we didn't care about the scale because one of the problems with Transformers is if you actually think about the size of these guys, it would be, you know, unproducible, you know, or it'd be just a very different show. But yeah, I had all of them, I had all of them to scale, and and they're just lined up along the wall, and so I'd be looking at them and trying to figure out how it would look and fit together. But then we'd have somebody draw it, storyboard it, and that would usually be someone in America, and some of the storyboard guys were just great. And then they'd send it off to Japan or Korea or some, you know, somewhere on the other side of the water to be animated, and you never knew what you're going to get back. You know, I mean, Transformers, you know, you're right, season 3, I think we had a different animation house, and it was, you know, it got really funky towards the end. And we were working, the same thing happened to other shows we were doing, we did Humanoids, and you know, that was just bizarre. They'd like, you know, just leave whole scenes out, and so we'd have to write lines of dialogue, cover the scenes that weren't in there, and then we'd have to re-edit it to make it look longer. And then the last thing we did was Visionaries, and Visionaries is probably the best looking show we ever did, by a long shot.
I remember watching Visionaries.
I loved Visionaries, that was awesome.
Yeah, and that was a company called TMS, and they put everything they had into it. It was by far the best looking show we did.
Like on average, I'm going to school and I'm actually studying film. I'm just curious, how long did it like take you guys to at least do like one episode? Like on average, how many hours did you guys normally put into those?
What do you mean, for writing it or just the whole process?
The whole process.
Okay. Well, I mean, usually it would start with a lot of times in the beginning. I don't think they did as much with Transformers later on. But the first season, they give you a list of characters they wanted to see in every episode. And then later on, that turned into just new characters, and then you get a fax, you know, we use faxes. And new characters, and then characters that'd be discontinued. They tell you, you know, who'd been discontinued. So they didn't use them. And a lot of times, you know, if Ashtray had been discontinued, then Dipstick would be inserted in there or something. And so we'd have to go write all the scenes, you know, get rid of Ashtray and put Dipstick in there. So figure the first step was you had to come up with a premise. So either we just come up, you know, just to like a couple sentences on what's going to happen. Yeah, you know, Megatron's, you know, going to try to steal, you know, the Matrix leadership from Optimus, and they're going to ambush him, and he's going to get it, and he's going to try to install it, and something bad's going to happen. You know, whatever the premise was. And, you know, and that would take a while. You know, sometimes it came out, you know, you'd have a really great day, and you have ideas for five shows in one day. And we had a, you know, we had a group of writers. We had, you know, there were Transformers at various different times. Doug Booth and I and Marv Wolfman came in, and sometimes Gerber would help out. And then, you know, we probably had 20 writers in a season of 60 shows. And so, you know, and it would range from – anyway, so sometimes the writers come up with the premise, or they just come over and we talk about a bunch of ideas and they come in. And the rule was you had to write 3 one-page takes on every idea. And so, I mean, it was some really vague idea, because the idea was the first take would always be the really obvious way of going. The second one would be obvious but a little bit different. Then the third one would be the really wild one. And it was good to have a choice to, you know, which one you pick, because, you know, you really got a lot of ideas. That would usually end up being some mix and match of all of them.
Kind of reminds me of those books of Choose Your Own Destiny ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Choose Your Own Adventure.
Choose Your Own Adventure books.
All those were awesome.
Yeah, at that time, I was writing Choose Your Own Adventure books with the guy that created Dungeons and Dragons, the guy named Gary Gygax.
I saw that. I was actually reading up on that, and I was – oh, God, here we go. I was a huge Dungeons and Dragons fan, and I love that. You got to remember.
Hey. I was a demon.
No, but you have to remember. In my childhood, the closest thing I ever got, and people are going to love this, to gaming in a computer was text gaming.
Yeah.
See if people remember that.
64.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my favorite games was they had a Dungeons & Dragons game.
I had, like,
And they were awesome.
Two I was missing. I think there was like 7 of them that were produced.
And I'm sorry, but you had to use this thing called imagination. Oh my God, you know, even with Dungeons and Dragons, you had to do this thing called reading. Holy crap! So
reading is hard.
My hat goes off to you. I love those. I love the whole.
Well, I'll tell you the moment where D&D and Transformers and G.I. Joe all crashed into each other. That is one day, you know, because I when I was doing this, we had an office down in Westwood, and, you know, for Sunbow. And then Gary and Dungeons and Dragons had a mansion up on top of the hill in Beverly Hills. And, you know, we had sand tables. We had every, you know, role-playing and miniatures game-playing thing you could possibly have. But so I brought a bunch of Joes and Transformers up with the idea we'd make up miniatures rules for them. Like the scale of them, they were so big that we had to play them out in the yard. We couldn't put them on sand tables and stuff. Yeah, because I wanted to see like a big, you know, a battle from the show, right? Transformer battle, except somebody had this idea they wanted G.I. Joes to be fighting Decepticons and, you know. So, which is basically what the Transformer movies are now. I think about the NES team and in the Transformer movies. Anyway, so I'm sitting there with Gary Gygax, and about, you know, a couple of the other, you know, designers that were working around there. And there was a big yard in this mansion. It wasn't like a spooky old mansion. It was like a giant ranch house is the way to think of it. But it was the top of the hill in Beverly Hills. And they had servants. They weren't really servants, but they had help around the house. And so they had tape measures. And we'd like decided, okay, Optimus can fire 12 feet. And, Optimus can fire 12 feet and he can move 3 feet per turn. And we're doing these massive miniatures games around the yard, trying to kill off Transformers. So that was when G.I. Joe, Transformers, and D&D all met. And then they servants who were like, you just had cocktails, and we were kind of thrash by the end of the day. So they had these like gin and tonics they were carrying around.
Is that where the idea from the crossover came from?
What?
Was that the birth of it? Was that the birth of the crossover idea?
Well, I mean, you mean the crossover between Joe and Transformers, or between
Joe and Transformers.
That was, you know what kind of came out of that? There's an episode, I'm trying to remember the name of it, in season 3.
I said, these guys will figure out the name. They know
They go in there and they're a bunch of monsters. I mean, I always wanted to have, like, you know, Transformers fighting dragons and stuff like that.
The one with Daniel's dreaming?
Yeah, remember they went to Char. No, this is long. Yeah, you're right. They went to
Chaos.
Chaos. And it was Chaos. So that's what kind of came out of that stuff. You know, but I mean, you see, I just viewed it. I mean, we just viewed it as all as one big world. I had a fan once give me this poster. It was the coolest thing he made. And that was, there's a character named Hector Ramirez, who's this reporter. He's really Geraldo Rivera, right? And Geraldo Rivera was out doing ridiculous stuff in those days. And Hector Ramirez appeared in Transformers, G.I. Joe, in Humanoids, and Jam. Okay, the same reporter. And we just viewed the world as crossing over. They wouldn't let us, like, have Joe suddenly show up in Transformers. But what was kind of fun is Marissa Fairborn was, you know, I always thought of her as Flint and Lady J's daughter. Flint's real name was Fairborn, you know, Flint from G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
And, you know, I figured he and Lady J got married, had a daughter, and she was running around in the Transformer movie. So that was, you know, that was her.
Whenever I heard her last name, I'm like, that must be their daughter. At least Flint's daughter. Yeah.
Well, it was.
What about that? That's
the interest in Flint. What?
There was an episode, Only Human, in season 3. At the end of it, Old Snake,
I was waiting for that,
raises his arms and says Cobra,
and then coughs.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I mean, we tried to do that stuff as much as we could, because I mean, you know, I mean, half the guys in the thing, you know, I mean, I was big into games and designing games, but pretty much, I'd say half the rest of them were comic book guys. In comic books, you're constantly mixing worlds, but nobody ever done that in animation. You know, and, you know, you just didn't get to do that unless it was like, you know, Super Friends or something. But we just figured Joe and Transformers, you know, Transformers are just, you know, they lived in the same world. They just didn't have to run into each other too often.
Bryce, you had your question.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's any episodes storyboarded or written for season 4 past Rebirth.
No, there never was. I mean, you know, this is the best to my knowledge. Okay, I mean, I'm telling you what I think, what I remember, and I can definitely be wrong about this, but there was never really any talk about a season 4 that I remember. You know, of the original season 1, 2, and 3 was pretty much the same team intact all the way through it, from, you know, probably after the pilots of both shows. And I came in, I was originally on G.I. Joe. Okay, I came in early on in G.I. Joe and was ghost story editing for Steve Gerber. Wasn't really ghost. I mean, everybody knew I was doing it. It wasn't like we were sneaking around. And they liked what I was doing, so they said, you know, we want to hire you. So I was on Joe for, you know, I don't know, probably about 3-4 months. And then they came and said, hey, we want you to move you over to Transformers because, you know, they were competing, losing against a show, not losing, but I mean, it was with a show called GoBots. Mm. And And so my job was to just, you know, age up Transformers a little bit and kind of give it an edge and kill GoBots. That was my mission. And, you know, so I ended up on that. But, I mean, we pretty much had our three seasons. And, you know, a lot of things happened all at once. It was phenomenally successful, but there was a lot of legislation, you know, laws had changed. And, you know, it would be impossible to overstate the number of parents groups and media groups and senators and stuff like that, you know, including Mr. Lieberman and Mr. Markey, who were trying to get these shows stopped. Yeah, and I don't know whether they really were worried about the violence in Transformers or what it was, but they were always after him for violence. Sometimes you have people that are worried about demonic possession. Oddly enough, it was My Little Pony that got that.
I can see that.
Yeah, it's something demonic about My Little Pony. Steven Hassenfeld got sick and died not long afterwards. He was one of the Hasbro brothers. So, you know, it just ended. You know, and pretty much after season three, we were done, and we sort of knew we were done, and I hung around and finished off Visionaries, but I never heard talk of season four or anything like that. Now, it may well be somebody put together a presentation for what we do in season four, but it really, you know, when it was over, it was just kind of over.
All right.
So basically the rebirth was kind of thrown together as the end of season three, maybe.
Yes.
And then it's been made season four.
Right. I think Marv Wolfman did that, didn't he? You know, I mean, that, you know, yeah, I mean, it seems like, I mean, I remember plotting all the way through, you know, what the main body of season three, and kind of I'd come and go on Transformers for about, I wrote the mini series that started season three. And then, you know, in a couple episodes, you know, I mean, depending on the episode, the line between story editing and writing was very thin. You know, sometimes you rewrite so much that, you know, you might as well have written the script. But, you know, so I remember coming in and doing it. But at that point, I was a lot on Humanoids and Visionaries, you know, by the end of season three. And, and so I don't really remember. I just sort of remember Marv was doing some wrap-up thing, but I never really, you know, I never really knew how it had happened. I mean, it wasn't clear to us that, at the time, I remember just having this feeling like, hey, you know, they're not ordering any new shows. Something changed. You know, and you know, and also, too, it's, you know, we're young and we're, you know, want to move on and do other stuff. So it was like, wow, that was a really great period. And, you know, what's next?
I got it's kind of a two-part question. And it builds on a little bit of what you alluded to there a moment ago about the five-parter that kicked off season three, which was the Five Faces of Darkness.
Right.
Earth 1-5. It kind of led off of Transformers, the animated movie from 1986. What kind of involvement did you have with the animated movie, and what was your creative processes and direction going into the Five Faces of Darkness?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a really great question. No one's ever asked that before, because it's a really interesting one. So basically, somewhere in the middle of, I think, 1985, I don't think I'm lying to you. I found out there was, you know, Jay Bacall called and said, hey, you know, we got a draft. Ron Friedman wrote a draft of the script, and it's, you know, we need to rewrite it. And so Jay and I took a week and wrote a script called Secret of Cybertron. We'd taken Ron Friedman's script. We just made up our own story, and literally inside a week, we had 100 pages of the script. Yeah, but bear in mind, I've been working on the show for a year and a half at that point, or at least, you know, well over a year. So, I mean, we knew the characters backwards and forwards. We knew that, you know, we'd seen Ron's script, and there was a lot of brilliant stuff in Ron's script. I mean, you have to know is there's a lot of controversy about it, you know, him being replaced and all that. And in movie world, that's not like some big disgrace. I mean, every screenplay or movie you see has 12 writers on it. You know, I mean, it's just how it works. But anyway, so Jay and I hold up, and we wrote the Secret of Cybertron. And the whole gag was that Cybertron and, I mean, the Unicron and Cybertron were kind of brothers. But Cybertron had become, I mean, I'm paraphrasing it. And but nobody knew, you know, and when Unicron emerged, you know, the Autobots, basically what ends up happening is it turns out what the Optimus' Matrix does is it opens up Unicron and he transforms and he fights Unicron, right? You know, they've been this giant robot. And most of the characters are killed. At one point, we had a scene where basically the entire 84 product line got wiped out in this big charge where they're, you know, fighting their way past the Decepticons and all that to install the Matrix into the core of Cybertron so they can transform him and defeat Unicron, right? We thought this was the greatest script anybody had ever written for any reason. And, you know, we were really excited about it. And of course, you know, Joe and Tom didn't share our enthusiasm. So
sounds pretty awesome to me.
I would love to do. I would love to find. Nobody has a copy of The Secret of Cybertron. It doesn't exist anywhere because, you know, Jay and I wrote it. And, you know, and in a week, it had a very small. It was Jay and I and Roger Schleifer and Joe and Tom and probably Carol Weitzman and nobody else ever saw it. And. But anyway, it was very influential to what ended up being the real Transformer movie, Transformers the movie. And I did probably 25 drafts of Transformers the movie after that. Some of them were major drafts, some of them were, you know, only a few scenes. But, you know, that was the next 6 months of my life, and I was holed up in Manhattan for 2 months. Well, 3 months, really, for an entire summer. I went back to LA a couple times, but rewriting the script right across the street from Sunbow's office. And so in all that process, there were a bunch of ideas we had, scenes we had, stuff we had that didn't make it into the movie. Okay. And then, you know, I got done with it and, you know, I was pretty fried and Joe and Tom called and said, "Hey, now we want you to write a 5-part miniseries." And I figure, oh good. Now I get to use all that stuff that we didn't get to use in the movie. But I mean, it wasn't like that. I mean, I thought of it as, you know, as a continuation for what happened after the movie. You know, at that point, you know, we were basically done with Earth, and now it was, let's go explore Transformer world. And the truth is, the product line, you know, for 1986 was all space-based stuff anyway. So, I mean, it really didn't fit in on Earth. There's nothing in disguise. We don't have spaceships on Earth. And so, you know, we put that together and, you know, I was really happy. I mean, Five Faces of Darkness is extremely controversial. Some people love it. Some people hate it. It's like third season. It's really funny. I did a poll on my Facebook page once because, you know, I always Transformer geeks arguing about it. I said, all right, what's your favorite season? What are your favorite episodes? And what was really interesting about it is it divided absolutely evenly over the three seasons. And when people pick favorite episodes, they divide it absolutely evenly over the three seasons. It was really kind of funny. I mean, somebody statistically figured all that stuff out. So I guess, you know, because they're all three seasons are really different. I mean, I look at season one as being, you know, some of it was, you know, kind of a kid's show at the beginning. And, you know, it was a lot of standalone episodes. And it was, a transition from old school cartoons to modern ones. Season two is kind of the pinnacle of G1 Transformers-ness, you know, Transformers being on Earth, but you go to space sometimes and you're meeting Alpha Trion and you're doing the Key to Vector Sigma and you're a little bit in space and you're a little bit into mythology and you're a little bit really thinking about Cybertron. And then season three after the movie is, you know, it really is like the Odyssey. I mean, you know, Optimus is dead for most of it and you have a new cast of characters and you're out in space and you're running into really weird stuff and there are Quintessons. So, I mean, it's really funny, even though the three seasons, they all, you know, blur seamlessly in my mind, you look at it really as a transition. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, that's very good. Now, the 86 movie was actually very controversial in a lot of ways. Number one, the biggest thing is that Optimus Prime dies, and... for those of you who have not seen G1, big spoiler alert there.
Shame on you.
Shame on you. But Optimus Prime dies, and it upset a lot of children back in the day. I remember. I mean, I was of the age where I was old enough to enjoy Transformers, but I was also old enough to handle the death of a character that was fictional. But there was quite a number of children that were really upset by the death of Optimus Prime. And also, Transformers, the movie in 86 originally it had cursing in it. And it's aimed at children, and it's kind of out of place. Was there any explanation for that?
Yeah. If anybody's heard these stories before, a lot of people ask me about that stuff, and I tell the same old boring stories about it, but I'll do it one more time because it's, basically the curse was in there for a very specific reason. It never existed in the script, but it was the marketing believed, and our distributors believed, that nobody would want to go see a G-rated movie. And so we wanted to get the PG. Okay, and you remember PG-13 had just been invented for Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, a couple of years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to get to PG. It was like, if it was G, we figured, no older kids and parents wouldn't go see it, and people think it's a little kiddie cartoon. And the fastest way they could get, because in those days, people, except for fanatics, but in the movie business, nobody really cared about violence, especially if it's robots. It's like car crashes or something. So they had to put a curse word in there to get the PG. So that was a very calculated business decision that happened far above my level.
Hmm.
Killing Optimus Prime, I think we knew it was going to be shocking, and we knew it would bum us out because we'd been working with the guy for 2 years. We didn't want to kill him. At the same time, that was a Hasbro decision, and we figured, we wanted it to be poignant. It's a movie. It's got to really do something. It's got to change the story. It can't just be a big Transformer episode. And the way they thought at the time, and this sounds stupid now, but in 1986, is we thought there were like 125 Transformers, and we knew Optimus Prime's a big character. We were constantly cycling new ones in and out. What I was telling you about Dipstick and Ashtray. There are a bunch of them. We just get letters. Sea Spray has been discontinued. Okay, no more Sea Spray. Power Glide bit the big one. Okay, Power Glide. And that stuff would happen a lot. And then what happened was, they put out the hit order on Optimus Prime. And, that Optimus Prime was, he's discontinued because they wanted to, their theory was they were progressing the season. They thought of it kind of like a sports team, and that basically the team stays the same, but players come and go, and nothing had prepared us for, the reaction of, incredibly negative reaction to the death of Optimus Prime. And, and Hasbro was somehow acting like, oh, we didn't know you were going to do that, which of course wasn't true. They issued the discontinue order. But they were very upset about it, and so we had to bring Optimus Prime back to life. And the funny thing about it, I hope this isn't a tired old story, but the funny thing about it was there was already an episode in the pipeline in which Optimus Prime comes back as a zombie and they have to kill him again. And that really traumatized some kid when he saw it. As a matter of fact, I think they delayed the run on that.
Yeah, I believe the Death of Optimus Prime, Dark Awakening, yes.
Yeah, Dark Awakening, yes. That was the one where Optimus comes back as a zombie. That was during our really morbid phase. There were a bunch of Starscream's ghosts. There were a bunch of morbid episodes in there.
They were good. They were good episodes.
What?
They were good.
Yeah, I like those episodes.
I like those.
I like that era a lot. I like season 3 because it really felt in season 3... it felt like we were going somewhere cartoons had never gone before. We really felt like, oh, wow. We've really got our characters. We're taking these, the Transformers to all sorts of weird planets. And so it was really interesting because, think about it. If you get done with 65 episodes of pretty much the same thing, it's kind of cool to like say, hey, let's go out to outer space. Let's have them fight. Weird troll looking things, it was very liberating season 3, and Death was so, for everybody the raised on writing cartoons for networks, you didn't even think about doing stuff like that. So the idea of having zombie Optimus Prime came back was really radical in 1987 and 86.
Now, you were writer. IMDb says you were writer for 6 episodes and associate producer for, looks like, a good bulk of them. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the credits are kind of weird because animation is not covered by the Writers Guild of America. And the rule pretty much was whoever the initial writer was retained writing credit. Okay, so and what it doesn't talk about is I was also story editor. Okay, and in those days, you know, it was a story editor in a TV or you know, associate producer or showrunner is what it really was, what you'd call it today. You know, because I mean, I was like the hands-on everyday person, you know, running Transformers. I mean, there was Jay Bacall above me, you know, who was just great, but, you know, I mean, he was, you know, executive function. And then Joe and Tom were above him, but that was really the chain of command. And Marvel was off to the side of us, but they actually worked for us. So, you know, the difference between being, tell me if this gets boring, but the difference between being an associate producer is that was a corporate, that's a production title. And that referred to more my going to, you know, recording sessions, going to sweetening sessions, editing sessions, all sorts of duties that have to do with production. As a writer, I mean, as a story editor, I was like working on the scripts, and eventually got to the point where I couldn't do all this stuff, and there were things I just wasn't good at. You know, Joe and Tom just figured I was better used by them as a writer than used by as a guy that would check, you know, negatives. Yeah, you know, it just wasn't something I was good at, and it wasn't the best use of my time. So we started, I would get a bigger and bigger, bigger staff of people doing bits and pieces of what I'd been doing in the beginning. It was good that I was doing it because I learned how to do it. But anyway, so then story editor, you're actually working on the script. Now, I just never felt that it was right to take somebody's name off the script they wrote the first draft. And, I, you know, I didn't really much care about the credit, and I was being paid extraordinarily well at that point. Because I'd been basically living like a college student. Oh, damn it. Yeah, so anyways, and so as a story editor, I mean, there were scripts that it was pretty much a page one rewrite. And then it would be every once in a while, there'd be one, there was almost nothing. Like Christy Marks wrote one, a G.I. Joe episode, like nobody made any changes. I mean, I never heard of that. I didn't know that was possible with the script. You know, it's just so complete and true to its own vision that, you know, it's like, I wouldn't change anything. And you know, and a lot of the regular writers, you know, like, you know, Buzz needed very little editing, except, you know, Buzz had put in, Buzz Dixon had put in, like, you know, you'd have, you know, Joe guys hanging a moon at people and stuff like that. You had to read it to catch all the sly little stuff he tried to slip fastest. But other than that, he did do a lot of editing. And Gerber, you know, I wasn't going to edit Stern and Steve Gerber. So, you know, his stuff just slid through.
I kind of have a question because this year they announced that they dissolved the entire Joe regime from Hasbro. Like, they took people from the guys that were working on all the G.I. Joe products and all that stuff. And even, like, as far as, like, you know, media and such, they even had any of that going. They completely dissolved it this year. Like, and this is their 50-year anniversary, and I'm like, that's a shocker. I mean,
I don't know what they're doing or what they're thinking. You know, maybe they're just frustrated with, I am in no touch. It's really funny because I'm so much more associated with and have so many more dealings with Transformers than G.I. Joe. But at the time, you know, I was as much a Joe guy as Transformers, you know, that's the way I thought of myself. And I have no idea what's going on or why they're doing stuff like that. The movies may have been a little disappointing. I have no idea how the toy sales are, but, you know, the G.I. Joe deserves to be treated a lot better than that, you know, and, you know, somebody ought to revive it in a really fun way. And, you know, I've never figured out the whole war on terror and all that. They didn't somehow, you know, I mean, you know, I think they just made a decision early on that, oh, we're not going to get involved in that stuff. But, I mean, you know, I you know, Osama bin Laden is like a fully licensable action figure, you know, it's like, but yeah, I have no idea what they're doing with G.I. Joe.
Yeah, it's well, I've heard that, like, it came up about 3 weeks ago or so when I heard about it, and then it pretty much was confirmed that they completely killed off the entire line, and The last thing I hear that's even being produced is by pretty much the guys that run JoeCon. They're doing like one figure thing. It's got something to do with G.I. Joe and zombies. And I'm like, that's kind of cool, but I wish they probably thought of that well before, maybe, and had brought in, you know, previous writers like you to come work on it again. You know, give it
some. Yeah, you know, nobody ever, it's a really funny thing about it. You know, I'm doing this Transformer graphic novel series now where we, you know, number two is out, number three, I just finished writing, and, you know, it'll come out in the fall or something. But here's what's funny about it. The only reason that happened, nobody ever, I mean, of the video game guys, I wrote the video game for the first Bayformer movie. But nobody ever, like, looks back and wants to do that. Everybody comes in, oh, we're going to do it completely new and different. You know, and that's just how it works. And the only reason I wrote the graphic novels is Chris Metzen just said, hey, you write a Transformer graphic novel series with me? And I thought, oh, okay. You know, and he had a really great idea. And so, you know, I just kind of coasted on him for, you know, probably the first book was, you know, 90% Chris, 10% me. And then, you know, I'd say the last book was, well, that's not true. I mean, you have to put a lot into it. But yeah, but they never think, oh, you know, man, let's go back to the guys that put G.I. Joe on the map. They never think that. You know, they always want to go, you know, whatever the new thing is. And it's really tragic because G.I. Joe is a great franchise, and they, you know, they should just figure out a way to, you know, to keep it going. And sometimes you just keep it going by just, you know, soldiering on, you know.
So right. Basically, what have you been approached at all or about any of the new Transformer series?
No. I mean, I was over, oddly enough, talking to the Hub about something completely different. But I'm doing this thing with Google. It's pretty all consuming, and then I'm doing a project for DARPA that's not taking up a lot of my life. A game thing for DARPA. Wait, can you guys excuse me 1 second? I got an animal. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to have so many distractions tonight.
That's fine.
My family went out of town today, and my life's chaotic. Hold on.
That's fine. I'm thinking, anybody else have any other questions you want to ask you before we move on to another
part? I got maybe one or two more.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got one question that I kind of want to keep towards the end. If possible.
Okay. Well, the next question I wanted to ask him was, you know, what's his favorite thing that he takes away from Transformers and his work on it? And then also, I wanted to give a little bit of time for items that he works on now currently, and also the video games.
That's kind of what I wanted to ask him too. What's his baby from G1? You know, what's he most proud of? You can probably ask him all of that in the same thing. So,
well, you go ahead.
Yeah, that way you can interact with him also.
Yes.
Absolutely. Now, with the gaming thing, I mean, I used to play World of Warcraft like intently, and I played Diablo 3 and beat it. You know, so I mean, I know what he's talking
moo,
about.
Moo moo. Story, moo, moo. Well. Moo 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 moo.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. He's just being a smarty boy.
No, I mean, I used to play, like, WoW a lot, and I beat Diablo 3.
Like my wife does.
Yeah.
By the way, only because he mentioned PG-13, you do realize this whole podcast can actually be rated G right now.
Yes.
We're on good behavior, dude. Come on.
You know it. Fucking A. Oh,
fucking person around here, buddy.
Then with the explicit rating again.
Just had to get it in there.
Yeah. Hey guys, I'm back.
Bloody hell.
Okay.
Sorry about that. And I unlocked my front door so my friend could come in and like wouldn't bother us yet another time. I mean, I just have to buzz him in and we'll be there. Anyway, sorry, where were we?
I believe Brandon had a question for you.
Sure.
Out of everything you've done on G1 and Transformers, what's your baby from G1? What's the main thing that you're proud of and that's yours, that you own it, you know?
Boy, Well, I mean, I guess I'd have to say just an evasive answer, and then I'll give you another one. I'll give you the greatest hint set of answers. I mean, the movie, from the point of view that, you know, it's really stood up as kind of an icon of the 80s. And, I worked on that thing for, that was a year of my life. I mean, I was doing the other shows and at the same time, but it's really cool. Every single word that finally ended up in that, like, came off my fingers at one point. That's not to say there wasn't a whole lot of collaboration and there were a lot of hands now. I'm not taking credit for the movie that way. But I just mean, it's really cool that, like, there's this thing out there that I remember doing in the 80s. It's now an icon of the 80s. And if you rewatch that movie, it is so 80s.
My favorite animated movie of all time.
Oh, well, thank you.
And that's not just being a Transformer fan. It's out there.
I watched it Tuesday.
Okay, then, there's something I like in that it was, like, just totally mine and nobody was paying attention except Jay Bacall, and that's Five Faces of Darkness. I just like because I just do, and how much that's tied to my own personal life and how much that's tied to what's actually on the screen, I don't know.
One of my favorite scenes from the entire series was from Five Faces of Darkness. I'm thinking it's part three, when Rodimus and Grimlock were observing the Decepticons on Char, and they were up on this mountaintop and they were trying to ascertain if these Decepticons were the ones that had kidnapped Springer and RC and the bunch. And they were like, and Grimlock just stands up and he doesn't care. He's like, well, if these aren't the guys, then who is it?
Exactly.
And then they fall down. And I chuckle to this day every time I watch that. I love it.
What's really funny about that is as recently as 2 weeks ago, I was writing in the comics we're doing, Rodimus and Grimlock have issues with each other. It's a million years before Transformers came to Earth. And it's really fun just rewriting those characters. And in a weird way, those two characters really work together. And I'm not sure why, but they just do. And then the episode, then there's the stuff that you really like that kind of got away. I mean, there was one episode I wrote. It's one of the few ones. Buzz Dixon and I did it. It was called Prime Target. It was written inside like a 24-hour period from we got this idea to it was a finished script and in production because some other script had fallen out. And I loved the idea we went into it with. He had some big game hunter who was trying to trap Transformers. He just viewed them as like, big game to go out and trap.
No,
and I love the idea of using the environment. I tried to do this in the video game Transformers, using the environment. You have these mechanical things, and you have all these, like, things that look like car washes, but they're really traps for the forum or toll booths or, it looks like, the building's on fire, but the building's a trap. And we never got it right, and it doesn't play that well in the movie, but it was, like, one of these things I just always wanted to do is have the environment really react to these creatures, these Transformers. Those were some of my favorite things. I mean, there are episodes that the thing I kind of like too that we did that is so relevant to the kind of stuff I'm doing now with alternate reality games, stuff like that. But we have two different versions of the origin story of Transformers, almost back to back. There's, I can't remember if it's in Key to Vector Sigma or the, what was the other one? The one
War
with
Dawn.
What?
War Dawn.
Yeah, it's one of those where Alpha Trion tells the whole story of the origin of the Transformers.
That was War Dawn.
Then we have the version I basically gave in Five Faces of Darkness. And what's really interesting about it is I worked on both those versions. Time wise, it was probably 3 months apart, and I realized they were totally different origins. Then I looked at the real Bible, and there are two different stories in Genesis for origins. And I figured, yeah, they're both kind of true. One of them's Alpha Trion telling his version of it, and the other one is, the Quintesson version of it that Alpha Trion probably wouldn't know because he was created by the Quintesson. You know what I mean? I always kind of liked it. I always wanted to do more with the the idea of these lazy quintessons went out and created all this stuff that would ultimately destroy them.
Well, I always thought that it would be a really cool idea in today's world if they could make an animated series that would go back and maybe span the 20 years or so between season two and season or the movie. If not animation, maybe in graphic novel or comic book form. That would be really fascinating. Was there ever any discussion back in the day of maybe going back and doing like flashback episodes that took place during
There was a lot of discussion of that, and I'm trying to remember. Part of it was that the Star Wars trilogy had just. I'm trying to remember how that played in. I can't. Yes, there was. There were times when we wanted to explain stuff in there. I think it's really weird. I think it was a weird problem that stopped it, you know, where it just never took off. And that is, it got bundled in with the – oh, God. Oh, sorry. Hello? Hello? Hey, I buzz you in and just come straight through the front door and come down to the basement. I'm still talking to these guys on the hangout. Okay. Yeah, just park right next to my car. Yeah, it's just on the end near the dumpster, park next to that. Okay. Bye-bye.
Let's Brett had a question, and we'll let him get in, and we'll let you go here.
I'm sorry. I hope I'm not being really boring.
You got some great stuff here.
Well, one of the things that you had mentioned at the beginning is that you were working on a project that you didn't feel at the time was going to be, you know, cherished 20 plus years later. I guess my question is the project you're working on now, do you feel any of those are going to have the staying power that
Transformers? Sorry, I'm just having a Google Plus problem. Repeat that again.
When you were talking about Transformers and how that you were working on a project, you didn't envision it to be cherished 20 plus years later. Do you think any of the projects you're working on now will have that same type of staying power?
Well, you know, I certainly didn't think it then, you know, so it's probably a bad omen if I think it now. also 20, you know, 30 years from now too, I'm be a pretty elderly guy, so I don't know, I'll be around to see it. But I would say that, I'm working on this thing I'm doing with Google has the potential for it. I got a bunch of stuff I'm doing right now. I mean, I have sort of like the big projects that I actually get paid for. And then I have sort of my I'm working on a pulp thing that I'm really kind of excited about. And a book that I wrote in that exact same period, these Agent 13 books, is now over at Universal being developed as a movie with Charlize Theron and Rupert Wyatt. So you never know when some old thing you did is going to suddenly come back to life. It never occurred to me. I mean, Dave Marconi and I wrote these books in like 86. And then Universal optioned them 2 years ago. And now they're putting together the script. I'm not writing it. They hired the multi-million dollar screenwriter to do it. You never know when something's going to burst back to life.
The short answer. Gotcha.
But, yeah, my grandfather created Buck Rogers. You know, would he have known that, you know, we're, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I was a big Buck Rogers fan. The one with Gil Gerard. Yeah. I was a big fan of that back in the day.
Well, Bill's on my Facebook page. Have you friended him or anything? He's around all the time.
Oh, sweet.
Gil is, and so is Aaron.
Oh. Real quick, tell us a little about. I know there's a lot of it, but. Some things about your work on video games. I know you did. It's showing you wrote the Ghostbusters video game from 2009. I love that game.
wrote that in 2009 with we're working with the real Harold Ramis just died, but I mean we're working with Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. Bill Murray. What's really funny about Ghostbusters was that I'm vaudelarizing it, but pretty much. When we started, you know, nobody knew where Bill Murray was because he just goes away and he tells his agent. His agent won't tell anybody where he is. And so, you know, and then he comes back when he has a job. So we wrote the entire first draft without Bill Murray in Ghostbusters. And you realize you can't tell Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd this, but yeah, Bill Murray's the center of Ghostbusters. Then they ran into him at a party and said, "What's going on with this game?" And so we had to rewrite it to put Bill Murray in there, and all of a sudden the script got really good. But the Ghostbusters movie that we're talking about is shockingly similar to our game script, which just makes me happy. I don't feel bad about it. I mean, it's happened a lot. I mean, Tom Cruise took we had a scene in the Mission Impossible video game where they knocked over the Vatican, and he used that in Mission Impossible 3. The opening for Chronicles of Riddick was actually a game scene we've done for Butcher Bay. You guys know any of these games, but
yeah, my wife is a huge Chronicles of Riddick fan.
Yeah, well, we've done a lot of stuff with Ben. I mean, Ben's great, but really, yeah, writing a Hannibal movie with Ben, as a matter of fact. About the conquering animal, not the psychopath. No, Ben's really great. But now, I mean, the whole thing is, you know, he's got the Fast and Furious. He's just on this run. It's hard for him to do anything else because, I mean, you know, they're a lot of fun for him to do, and you get paid, you know, $100 million a picture. You know, they're not going to say no to that. Mm-hmm.
BotCon. You've done BotCon or?
Oh yeah, BotCon.
What was your favorite experience from meeting the fans face to face?
That happens a lot. I mean, one day, I mean, you know, it's always just incredibly heartening. And I always run a quiz and ask fans who their favorite Transformer is. You know, just because it's kind of awkward, and you know, people come up, you know, while you're signing stuff, it's like, and then I keep a poll going. And what's really funny about it is I would have thought, you know, all the answers would be, you know, Optimus or Megatron. And the truth of the matter is that everybody's favorite Transformers, whoever they got when they were a kid. Yeah, so no, I mean, BotCon, it's always like that. It's fun doing the panels. It's fun seeing guys again. You know, like Bryce Malick, who's the story editor first season, he was the one of them. You know, David Wise is still mad at me because he didn't do any things the third season. But, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, I didn't make some decision not to work with David Wise the third season. He's one of the best Transformers writer there ever was, if indeed not the best. But it's like he didn't pitch any stories. It's like, you know, well, you gotta come sell a story, and that's how you write one. But anyway, yeah, so it's always kind of fun to you. So he's still a little annoyed at me after 30 years. Yeah, so it's cool seeing those. I see Buzz all the time, so I mean, it's not that unusual. I haven't seen Doug Booth in a long time. David Paul, I'm in contact with. I mean, it's funny what happens to that whole group, but there's a lot of them. Beanie, I still see him all the time, work with him. Steve Gerber died, so I don't see much of him. Yeah, I mean, it's funny how, but I feel like I still see a lot of those guys. So that's what BotCon is to me in a lot of cases. It's, you know, it's seeing the old people. They, you know, Wally Burr. You know, I walk in, there's Wally Burr selling storyboards. You know, it's like, Wally, you're selling storyboards. yeah, I know he's lying around. Okay. So it's cool seeing those guys. It was cool doing the 25th anniversary thing and seeing Nelson. I hadn't seen Nelson, you know, since we did the movie. Frankly, I hadn't seen the movie since we did the movie until we were doing a couple days before we did the voice track for it, you know, the comment chat. I watched it. You know, because I didn't know whether to go into a cold, and I said, I shouldn't do that. I should, you know, have some idea what I'm going to say. You know, because sometimes, you know, it's just a different take. If I, you know, what I'd say if I hadn't seen it in 25 years versus what I'd see if I'd, yeah, I've seen it twice in the last 24 hours.
Any of you guys have any questions before we wrap up?
I can think of at the moment.
Well, Mr. Dilley, I really want to thank you for joining us.
I'm so sorry for being distracted during this. No. It's one of those rare times when I'm the only one home and I can't not answer the phone because, you know, then somebody gets trapped out at the door, or, you know, somebody comes to arrest you and they don't find you or something.
That's quite all right.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. Thanks for being patient, guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us.
If you have more questions anytime you want, I'll come back. I'm incredibly findable.
We would love to have you back. Okay. I will wrap up the show here. And, guys, listeners, see you later. Thank you. Listeners, if you have any questions for Mr. Dilley, we can still ask them of him after the show. I can forward them on to him. You can feel free to ask them on our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups. Check us out on Twitter at TFYLP and also, of course, tftalk.net. Also, check out our sponsor, CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service, where you can pre-order Citizen Stack for $180 shipped within the U.S. He should be in the next couple weeks. And go ahead and get your orders in. I've had my hands on the figure, and it is quite nice. Anybody have anything they want to say before we wrap up? Nope. All right. Well, we will see you next time on TFYLP. I am Weird Wolf. Along with me is Barisi.
Hey.
I am Unicron.
Later, guys.
Plasticon.
See you guys later.
And Megamus.
Peace out.
See you next time on TFYLP.
This has been Transformers for your listening pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.